can't, for now, explain how you're doing it, but that's only because I haven't been able to peek behind the curtain of your shameful illusionist.
You're saying you want to see the countdown on an even greater scale?
Shen's question stunned Wong for a moment. He forced himself to be calm so he wouldn't fall into a trap.
Put away your set of tricks. So what if you show it at a bigger scale? It's still only an illusion. You can project a hologram into the sky, like what NATO did during the last war. With a powerful enough laser, you can project an image onto the surface of the moon. The shooter and the farmer should be able to manipulate matters at a scale that humans cannot. For example, can you make the countdown appear on the surface of the sun?
Wong's mouth hung open. He had shocked himself with his own words. Unconsciously, he had named the two hypotheses that he ought to have avoided. He felt on the verge of falling into the same mental trap that had claimed the other victims. Trying to seize the initiative, he continued.
I can't anticipate all your tricks, but even with the sun, perhaps your despicable illusionist can still somehow make the deception seem real. To give a demonstration that will really be convincing, you have to display it at an even larger scale.
The question is whether you can take it, Shen said. We're friends. I want to help you avoid Yang Dong's fate.
The mention of Yang's name made Wong shudder. But another surge of anger made him reckless.
Will you take up my challenge?
Of course.
What are you going to do?
Do you have a computer connected to the internet? Okay. Enter the following web address. http://www.qsl.net/bg3tt/zl/mesdm.htm. You got it open? Now print it out and keep it with you.
Wong saw that the page was nothing more than a Morse code chart.
I don't understand this.
During the next 2 days, please find a place where you can observe the cosmic microwave background. For specifics, please check the email I'll send you.
What? What are you going to do?
I know that your nanomaterial project has been stopped. Do you plan on restarting it?
Of course. 3 days from now.
Then the countdown will continue.
At what scale will I see it?
A long silence followed. This woman, who was acting as the spokesperson for some force beyond human understanding, blocked every exit Wong had.
3 days from now. That's the 14th. Between 1 and 5 in the morning, the entire universe will flicker for you.
7. Three Body. King Wen of Zhou and the Long Night. Wong dialed Ding Yi's number. Only when Ding picked up did he realize that it was already 1 in the morning.
This is Wong Miao. I'm sorry to be calling so late.
No problem. I can't sleep anyway.
I have seen something, and I'd like your help. Do you know if there are any facilities in China that are observing the cosmic microwave background?
Wong had the urge to talk to someone about what was going on, but he thought it best to not let too many people know about the countdown that only he could see.
The cosmic microwave background? What made you interested in that? I guess you really have run into some problems. Have you been to see Yang Dong's mother yet?
I'm sorry, I forgot.
No worries. Right now, many scientists have seen something, like you. Everyone's distracted. But I think it's still best if you go visit her. She's getting on in years, and she won't hire a caretaker. If there's some task around the home that she needs help with, please help her. Oh, right, the cosmic microwave background. You can ask Yang's mother. Before she retired, she was an astrophysicist. She's very familiar with such facilities in China.
Good. I'll go after work today.
Then I'll thank you in advance. I really can't face anything that reminds me of Yang Dong again.
After hanging up, Wong sat in front of his computer and printed out the simple Morse code chart. By now, he was calm enough to turn his thoughts away from the countdown. He pondered the frontiers of science, Shen Yufei, and the computer game she had been playing. The only thing he knew for certain about Shen was that she wasn't the type to enjoy computer games. She spoke like a telegraph and gave him the impression that she was always extremely cold. It wasn't the kind of coldness that some people put on like a mask. Hers suffused her all the way through. Wong subconsciously thought of her as the long obsolete DOS operating system, a blank black screen, a bare C:\prompt, a blinking cursor. Whatever you entered, it echoed back. Not one extra letter and not a single change. But now he knew that behind the C:\ was a bottomless abyss.
She's actually interested in a game? A game that requires a V-suit? She has no kids, which means she bought the V-suit for herself. The very idea is preposterous.
Wong entered the address for the game into the browser. It had been easy to memorize, www.threebody.net. The site indicated that the game only supported access via V-suit. Wong remembered that the employee lounge at the Nanotechnology Research Center had a V-suit. He left the now-empty main lab and went to the security office to get the key. In the lounge, he passed the pool tables and the exercise machines and found the V-suit next to a computer. He struggled into the haptic feedback suit, put on the panoramic viewing helmet, and turned on the computer. After entering the game, Wong found himself in the middle of a desolate plain at dawn. The plain was dun-colored, blurry, its details hard to make out. In the distance, there was a sliver of white light on the horizon. Twinkling stars covered the rest of the sky. There was a loud explosion, and two red-glowing mountains crashed against the earth in the distance. The whole plain was bathed in red light. When the dust finally cleared from the sky, Wong saw two giant words erected between the sky and the earth. Three body. Next came a registration screen. Wong created the ID, Hiren, and logged in. The plane remained desolate, but now the compressors in the V-suit whirred to life, and Wong could feel gusts of cold air against his body. Before him appeared two walking figures, forming dark silhouettes against the dawn light. Wong ran after them. He saw that both figures were male. They were dressed in long robes full of holes, covered by dirty animal hides. Each carried a short, wide bronze sword. One of them carried a narrow wooden trunk that was as long as half his height. He turned around to look at Wong. The man's face was as dirty and wrinkled as the hide he wore, but his eyes were sharp and lively, the pupils glinting in the early morning glow.
"It's cold," he said.
"Yes, very cold."
"This is the Warring States period,"
the man with the trunk on his back said.
"I am King Wen of Zhou."
"I don't think King Wen belongs to the Warring States period," Wong said.
"He survived until now,"
the other man said.
"King Zhou of Shang is alive too. I am a follower of King Wen. Indeed, that's my login ID. Follower of King Wen of Zhou. He's a genius, you know."
"My login ID is Hiren. What are you carrying on your back?"
King Wen put down the rectangular trunk and stood it up vertically. He opened one of the sides like a door and revealed five compartments within. By the faint light, Wong could see that every layer held a small mound of sand. Every compartment seemed to have sand falling into it from the compartment above, through a small hole.
"A type of sand glass. Every 8 hours, all the sand flows to the bottom. Flip it 3 times, and you can measure a day. But often I forget to flip it, and I need follower here to remind me."
"You seem to be on a very long journey. Is it necessary to carry such a bulky clock?"
"How else would we measure time?"
"A portable sundial would be much more convenient, or else you could just look at the sun and know the approximate time."
King Wen and follower stared at each other, and then turned as one to gaze at Wong, as though he was an idiot.
The sun. How can the sun tell us the time? We're in the midst of a chaotic era.
Wong was about to ask for the meaning of the strange term when Follower cried out piteously,
"It's so cold! I'm gonna die of the cold!"
Wong felt very cold as well, but in most games, taking off his V-suit would immediately cause his ID to be deleted by the system. He couldn't do that. He said,
"When the sun comes out, it'll be warmer."
"Are you pretending to be some kind of oracle? Even King Wen cannot predict the future."
Follower shook his head contemptuously.
"What does what I said have to do with predicting the future? Everyone can see that the sun will rise in about another hour or two."
Wong pointed to the sliver of light above the horizon.
"This is a chaotic era."
"What is a chaotic era?"
"Other than stable eras, all times are chaotic eras."
King Wen answered the way he would have spoken to an ignorant child. Indeed, the light over the horizon dimmed and soon disappeared. Night covered everything. The stars overhead shone even more brightly.
"So that was dusk instead of dawn?"
Wong asked.
"It is morning, but the sun doesn't always rise in the morning. That's what a chaotic era is like."
Wong found the cold hard to take.
"It looks like the sun won't rise for a long time."
He shivered and pointed to the blurry horizon.
"What makes you think that? There's no way to be certain. I told you, this is a chaotic era."
Follower turned to King Wen.
"May I have some dried fish?"
"Absolutely not."
King Wen's tone brooked no disagreement.
"I barely have enough for myself. We must guarantee that I make it to Zhao Ge, not you."
As they spoke, Wong noticed the sky brightening over another part of the horizon. He couldn't be sure of the compass directions, but he was sure the direction this time was different from last time. The sky grew brighter, and soon the sun of this world rose. It was small and bluish in color, like a very bright moon. Wong still felt a bit of warmth and could now see the landscape around him more clearly. But the day didn't last long. The sun traversed a shallow arc over the horizon and soon set. Night and the bone-chilling cold once more settled over everything. The three travelers stopped in front of a dead tree. King Wen and Follower took out their bronze swords to chop the tree into firewood, and Wong gathered the firewood into a pile. Follower took out a piece of flint and struck it against a blade until the sparks caught. The fire soon warmed the front of Wong's V-suit, but his back remained cold.
"We should burn some of the dehydrated bodies,"
Follower said.
"Then we'll have a roaring fire."
"Put that thought out of your mind. Only the tyrant King Zhou would engage in that kind of behavior."
"We've seen so many dehydrated bodies scattered along the road here. They've been torn and won't be revivable even when rehydrated. If your theory really works, what does it matter if we burn a few of them? We can even eat some. How can a few lives compare to the importance of your theory?"
"Stop with that nonsense. We're scholars."
After the fire burnt out, the three continued their journey. Since they were not speaking to each other much, the system sped up the passage of in-game time. King Wen flipped the sand glass on his back 6 times rapidly, indicating the lapse of 2 days. The sun never rose once, not even a hint of dawn over the horizon.
"It seems that the sun will never rise again,"
Wong said. He brought up the game menu to take a look at his health bar. Due to the extreme cold, it was steadily decreasing.
"Again, you're pretending you're some kind of oracle,"
Follower said. But this time, he and Wong finished the thought together.
"This is a chaotic era."
Soon after this, however, dawn did appear over the horizon. The sky brightened rapidly, and the sun rose. Wong noticed that this time, the sun was gigantic. After just half of it rose, it took up at least 1/5 of the visible horizon. Waves of heat bathed them, and Wong felt refreshed. But when he glanced over at King Wen and follower, he saw that both had terror on their faces as though they had seen a demon.
"Quick, find shade!"
follower shouted. Wong ran after them. They ducked behind a large rock. The shadow cast by the rock gradually grew shorter and shorter. The earth around them glowed as though on fire. The permafrost beneath them soon melted, the steel-like hard surface turning into a sea of mud, roiled by waves of heat. Wong sweated profusely. When the sun was directly overhead, the three covered their heads with the animal hides, but the bright light still shot through the holes and gaps like arrows. The three shifted around the rock until they were able to hide inside the new shadow that had just appeared on the other side. After the sun set, the air remained hot and damp. The three sweat-drenched travelers sat on the rock. Follower spoke with dismay.
"Traveling during a chaotic air is like walking through hell. I can't stand it anymore. Also, I haven't had anything to eat because you won't give me any dried fish, and you won't let me eat the dehydrated bodies. What?"
"The only choice is to dehydrate you," King Wen said, fanning himself with a piece of hide.
"You won't abandon me afterwards, will you?"
"Of course not. I promise to bring you to Zhao Ge." Follower stripped off his sweat-soaked robe and lay down nude on the muddy earth. In the last glow from the sun, already below the horizon, Wong saw water oozing out of Follower's body. He knew that it was no longer sweat. All the water in his body was being discharged and squeezed out. The water coalesced into a few small rivulets in the mud. His body turned soft and lost its shape like a melting candle. 10 minutes later, all the water had been eliminated from his body. Follower was now a man-shaped piece of leather stretched out on the ground. His facial features had flattened and become indistinct.
"Is he dead?"
Wong asked. He remembered seeing such man-shaped pieces of hide scattered along the road. Some were torn and incomplete. He supposed they were the dehydrated bodies Follower spoke of earlier as potential kindling.
"No,"
King Wen answered. He picked up Follower's skin, brushed the mud and dust off, laid him out on the rock, and rolled him up like a balloon with its air let out.
"He'll recover soon enough, when we soak him in water. It's just like soaking dried mushrooms."
"Even his bones have turned soft?"
"Yes. His skeleton is turned into dried fibers. This makes him easy to carry."
"In this world, can everyone be dehydrated and rehydrated?"
"Of course. You can too. Otherwise we could not survive the chaotic eras."
King Wen handed the rolled-up follower to Wong.
"Carry him. If you abandon him on the road, he'll be burned or eaten."
Wong accepted the skin, a light roll. He held it under his arm, and it didn't feel too strange. With Wong carrying the dehydrated follower and King Wen carrying the sand glass, the two continued their arduous journey. Like the previous few days, the progress of the sun in this world followed no pattern. After a long, frigid night, lasting several days' worth of time, a brief but scorching day might follow, and vice versa. The two relied on each other for survival. They lit fires to hold off the cold, and ducked into lakes to avoid the heat. At least the game sped up the progress of time. A month in game time might pass in half an hour. This made the journey through the chaotic era at least tolerable for Wong. One day, after a long night that lasted almost a week, as measured by the sand glass, King Wen suddenly shouted joyously as he pointed to the night sky.
"Flying stars! 2 flying stars!
Actually, Wong had already noticed the strange celestial bodies. They were bigger than stars and showed up as disks about the size of ping-pong balls. They moved through the sky at a pace quick enough for the naked eye to detect the motion, but it was the first time 2 of them had appeared together. King Wen explained.
"When 2 flying stars appear, it means a stable era is about to begin."
"We've seen flying stars before,"
Yes, but only one at a time.
Is two the most we'll see at once?
No. Sometimes three will appear, but no more than that.
If three flying stars appear, does that herald an even better era?
King Wen gave Wong a frightened look.
What are you talking about? Three flying stars? Pray that such a thing never happens.
King Wen turned out to be right. The yearned-for stable era soon began. Sunrise and sunset began to follow a pattern. A day-night cycle began to stabilize around 18 hours. The orderly alternation of day and night made the weather warm and mild.
How long does a stable era last?
Wong asked.
As short as a day, or as long as a century. No one can predict how long one will last.
King Wen sat on the sandglass, lifting his head to gaze at the noonday sun.
According to historical records, the Western Zhou dynasty experienced a stable era lasting 2 centuries. How lucky to be born during such a time.
Then how long does a chaotic era last?
I already told you. Other than stable eras, all other times belong to chaotic eras. Each of them takes up the time not occupied by the other.
So this is a world in which there are no patterns?
Yes. Civilization can only develop in the mild climate of stable eras. Most of the time, humankind must collectively dehydrate and be stored. When a long stable era arrives, they collectively revive through rehydration. Then they proceed to build and produce.
How can you predict the arrival and duration of each stable era?
Such a thing has never been done. When a stable era arrives, the king makes a decision based on intuition as to whether to engage in mass rehydration. Often the people are revived, crops are planted, cities begin construction, life has just started, and then the stable era ends. Extreme cold and heat then destroy everything.
King Wen now pointed at Wong, his eyes sparkling.
Now you know the goal of this game. To use our intellect and understanding to analyze all phenomena until we can know the pattern of the sun's movement. The survival of civilization depends on it.
Based on my observations, there is no pattern to the sun's movement at all.
That's because you do not understand the fundamental nature of the world.
And you do?
Yes. This is why I'm going to Zhao Ge. I will present King Zhou with an accurate calendar.
But I've seen no evidence on this trip that you can do such a thing.
Predicting the sun's motion is only possible in Zhao Ge, for that is where yin and yang meet. Only the lots cast there are accurate.
The two continued on through the harsh conditions of another chaotic era, interrupted briefly by a short stable era, until they finally arrived in Zhao Ge. Wong heard an unceasing roar that sounded like thunder. The sound was generated by the numerous giant pendulums that could be seen all over Zhao Ge, each tens of meters in height. The weight of each pendulum was a giant rock, suspended from a thick rope tied to a bridge that stretched between the tops of 2 slender stone towers. All the pendulums were swinging as groups of soldiers in armor kept them in motion. Chanting incomprehensibly, they rhythmically pulled ropes attached to the giant stone weights, adding to the pendulum's arcs as they slowed. Wong noticed that all the pendulums swung in step. From far away, the sight was awe-inducing. It was as though numerous giant clocks had been erected over the earth, or colossal, abstract symbols had fallen from the sky. The giant pendulum surrounded an even more enormous pyramid, standing like a tall mountain in the dark night. This was King Zhou's palace. Wong followed King Wen into a low door at the base of the pyramid, before which a few soldiers patrolled in the darkness, noiseless as ghosts. The door led to a long, narrow, dark tunnel going deep into the pyramid, with a few torches along the way. As they walked, King Wen spoke to Wong.
During a chaotic era, the entire country is dehydrated. But King Zhou remains awake, a companion to the lifeless land.
In order to survive during a chaotic era, one must live in thick-walled buildings like this one, as though one were living underground. It's the only way to avoid the extreme heat and cold. After a long time in the tunnel, they finally arrived at the Great Hall at the center of the pyramid. Actually, the hall was not that big and reminded Wong of a cave. The man sitting on a dais and draped with a party-colored hide was undoubtedly King Zhou. But what drew Wong's attention was a man dressed all in black. The black robe blended with the thick shadows in the Great Hall, and the pale white face seemed to float in air.
"This is Fu Xi."
King Zhou introduced the man in black to Wong and King Wen. He spoke as though Wong and King Wen had always been there, while the man in black was the newcomer.
"He thinks that the sun is a temperamental god. When the god is awake, his moods are unpredictable, and thus we have a chaotic era. But when he's asleep, his breathing evens out, and thus we have a stable era. Fu Xi suggested that I build those pendulums you see out there and keep them in constant motion. He claims that the pendulums can have a hypnotic effect on the sun god and cause him to sink into a long slumber. But we can all see that so far the sun god remains awake, though from time to time he seems to nap briefly."
King Zhou waved his hands, and servants brought over a clay pot and set it down on the small stone table before Fu Xi. Later, Wong found out that it was a pot of seasoned broth. Fu Xi sighed, lifted the pot, and drank in great gulps, the sound of his swallows echoing like the beating of a giant heart in the darkness. After he was halfway done with the contents, he poured the rest over his body. Then he threw down the pot and walked toward a large bronze cauldron suspended over a fire in the corner of the great hall. He climbed onto the edge of the cauldron and jumped in, stirring up a cloud of vapor.
"Ji Chong, sit down,"
King Zhou said.
"We'll eat in just a little while."
He pointed to the cauldron.
"Foolish witchcraft,"
King Wen said, glancing contemptuously at the cauldron.
"What have you learned about the sun?"
King Zhou asked. Firelight flickered in his eyes.
"The sun is not a god. The sun is yang, and the night is yin. The world proceeds on the balance between yin and yang. Though we cannot control the process, we can predict it."
King Wen took out his bronze sword and drew a yin-yang symbol on the floor, dimly lit by the fire. Then he carved the 64 hexagrams of the I Ching around the symbol, the whole composition resembling a calendar wheel.
"My king, this is the code of the universe. With it, I can present your dynasty with an accurate calendar."
"Ji Chong, I need to know when the next long, stable era will come."
"I will forecast it for you right now,"
King Wen said. He sat down in the middle of the yin-yang symbol, his legs curled under him. He raised his head to look up at the ceiling of the great hall, his gaze seeming to penetrate the thick stones of the pyramid until it reached the stars. The fingers of his two hands began a series of rapid, complex movements, like components of a calculating machine. In the silence, only the soup in the cauldron in the corner made any noise, boiling and bubbling as though the shaman being cooked within was dream-talking in his sleep. King Wen stood up in the middle of the yin-yang symbol. With his face still lifted to the ceiling, he said,
"Next will be a chaotic era lasting 41 days. Then comes a 5-day stable era. Thereafter, there will be a 23-day chaotic era, followed by an 18-day stable era. Then we'll have an 8-day chaotic era. But when this chaotic era is over, my king, the long, stable era you've been waiting for will begin. That stable era will last 3 years and 9 months. The climate will be so mild that it'll be a golden age."
We have to verify your initial predictions first.
King Zhou said, his face expressionless. Wong heard a loud rumbling from above. A stone slab in the ceiling of the great hall slid open, revealing a square opening. Wong shifted his position and saw that the opening led to another tunnel going up through the center of the pyramid. At the end of the tunnel, he could see a few twinkling stars. Game time sped up. Every few seconds, in real time, two soldiers flipped over the sand glass brought by King Wen, indicating the passing of 8 hours in game time. The opening through the ceiling flickered with random lights, and once in a while a ray of sunlight from the chaotic era shot into the great hall. Sometimes the light was weak, like moonlight. Sometimes the light was very strong, and the incandescent white square cast against the ground glowed so brightly that the torches in the great hall paled in comparison. Wong continued to count the flipping of the sand glass. By the time it had been flipped 120 times or so, the appearance of the sunlight through the square opening became regular. The first of the predicted stable eras had arrived. After 15 more flips of the sand glass, the flickering light through the opening became patternless again, the start of another chaotic era. Another stable era followed, and another chaotic era. The starting times and durations of the various eras were not exactly as King Wen had predicted, but they were close. After the conclusion of yet another 8-day chaotic era, the long stable era he predicted began. Wong kept counting the flips of the sand glass. 20 days passed, and the sunlight falling into the great hall maintained the precise rhythm. Game time slowed down to normal. King Zhou nodded at King Wen.
I shall erect a monument for you, one even greater than this palace.
King Wen bowed deeply.
My king, awaken your dynasty and let it prosper.
King Zhou stood up on the dais and opened his arms, as though he wanted to embrace the whole world. In a strange, otherworldly voice, he began to chant,
"Rehydrate."
As soon as the order was given, everyone in the great hall rushed to the door. Wong followed King Wen closely, and they exited the pyramid through the long tunnel they'd entered by. When they emerged, Wong saw the noonday sun bathing the land in warmth. In a passing breeze, he seemed to smell the fragrances of spring. Together, King Wen and Wong walked to a nearby lake. The ice over the lake had melted, and sunlight danced between the gentle waves. A column of soldiers shouted,
"Rehydrate! Rehydrate!"
as they ran toward a large stone building shaped like a granary next to the lake. On the road to Zhaoge, Wong had seen many buildings like it, and King Wen had told him that these buildings were called dehydratories, warehouses where the dehydrated bodies could be stored. The soldiers opened the heavy stone doors of the dehydratory and carried out rolls of dusty skins. Each soldier walked to the lakeshore and tossed them into the water. As soon as the skins touched the water, they began to unfurl and stretch out. Soon, the lake was covered by a layer of man-shaped floating skins, each rapidly absorbing the water and expanding. Gradually, all the man-shaped skin cutouts became fleshy bodies that gradually began to display signs of life. One by one, they struggled up out of the waist-deep water and stood up. Looking around at the sunny world with wide-open eyes, they appeared to have just awoken from a dream.
"Rehydrate!"
one man cried out.
"Rehydrate! Rehydrate!"
Other voices joyously echoed his. Everyone climbed out of the lake and ran naked toward the dehydratory. They carried out more skins and tossed them into the water, and even more of the revived climbed out of the lake. The same scene repeated itself around every lake and pool. The entire world was coming back to life.
"Oh, heavens! My finger!"
Wong saw a man who had just been revived standing in the middle of the lake, holding up one hand and crying. The hand was missing its middle finger, and blood flowed from the wound into the water. Others, who had also just been revived, passed by him as they happily waded ashore, ignoring him.
"Count yourself lucky," one of them said to the man. "Some lost a whole arm or leg. Others had their heads chewed through by rats. If we hadn't been rehydrated in time, maybe all of us would have been eaten by the chaotic air rats."
"How long have we been dehydrated?" one of the revived asked.
"You can tell by looking at the thickness of the dust covering the palace.
I just heard that the king is no longer the king from before, but I don't know if he's the old king's son or grandson."
It took 8 days to complete the work of rehydration. All of the stored dehydrated bodies had been revived, and the world was given a new life. During these 8 days, everyone enjoyed regular cycles of sunset and sunrise, each cycle precisely 20 hours long. Enjoying the spring-like climate, everyone gave heartfelt praise to the sun and the gods who guided the world. On the night of the 8th day, the bonfires scattered over the ground seemed even more numerous and denser than the stars in the sky. The ruins of cities and towns abandoned during the chaotic eras once again filled with noise and light. Like every mass rehydration in the past, the people were going to celebrate all night to welcome their new life after the next sunrise. But the sun did not rise again. Every kind of timepiece indicated that the time for sunrise had passed, but the horizon remained dark in every direction. 10 hours later, there was still no sign of the sun, not even the slightest hint of dawn. The endless night lasted through a whole day, then 2 days. Coldness now pressed toward the earth like a giant hand. Inside the pyramid, King Wen knelt before King Zhou, pleading.
"My king, please continue to have faith in me. This is but temporary. I have seen the yang of the universe gathering, and the sun will rise soon. The stable era and spring will continue."
"Let's begin to heat the cauldron," King Zhou said, and sighed.
"Oh, king!"
A minister stumbled through the cave-like entrance into the great hall.
There are 3 flying stars in the sky!"
Those in the great hall were stunned. The air seemed frozen. Only King Zhou remained impassive. He turned to Wong, to whom he had never deigned to speak before.
"You still don't understand what the appearance of 3 flying stars means, do you? Ji Chang, why don't you tell him?"
"It indicates the arrival of a long period of extreme cold. Cold enough to turn stone into dust."
King Wen sighed.
"Dehydrate,"
King Zhou again chanted in that strange, otherworldly voice. Outside, people had already begun the process. They turned themselves back into dehydrated bodies to survive the long night that was coming. The lucky ones had time to be stacked in the dehydratories, but many were abandoned in the empty fields. King Wen stood up slowly and walked toward the cauldron over the roaring fire in the corner of the great hall. He climbed up the side and paused for a few seconds before jumping in. Perhaps he had seen the thoroughly cooked face of Fu Xi laughing at him from the soup.
"Keep the fire low,"
King Zhou ordered, his voice weak. Then he turned to the others.
"You may exit if you wish. The game is no longer fun after it gets to this point."
A red exit sign showed up above the Great Hall's cave-like entrance. Players in the Great Hall streamed toward it, and Wong followed the crowd. Through the long tunnel, they finally emerged outside the pyramid. Heavy snow falling through the night air greeted them. The bone-chilling cold caused Wong to shiver, and a display in a corner of the sky indicated that game time had sped up again. The snow continued without pause for 10 days. By now the snowflakes were large and heavy, like pieces of solidified darkness. Someone whispered next to Wong,
"The snow is now composed of frozen carbon dioxide. Dry ice."
Wong turned around and saw that the speaker was Follower. After another 10 days, the snowflakes turned thin and translucent. By the weak light from a few torches within the entrance to the long tunnel, the snowflakes gave off a faint blue glow, like pieces of dancing mica.
"Those snowflakes are now composed of solidified oxygen and nitrogen. The atmosphere is disappearing through deposition, which means it's near absolute zero above."
Snow gradually buried the pyramid. The lowest layers were composed of water snow, then dry ice, and finally, on top, snow made of oxygen and nitrogen. The night sky became especially clear, and the stars glowed like a field of silver bonfires. A line of text appeared against the starry background. "The long night lasted 48 years. Civilization number 137 was destroyed by the extreme cold. This civilization had advanced to the Warring States period before succumbing. The seed of civilization remains. It will germinate and again progress through the unpredictable world of Three-Body. We invite you to log on in the future." Before exiting the game, Wong noticed the three flying stars in the sky. Revolving closely around each other, they seemed to perform a strange dance against the abyss of space. 8. Ye Win Tsia. Wong took off the V-suit and panoramic viewing helmet. His shirt was soaked with sweat, as if he had just awoken from a nightmare. He left the research center, got into his car, and drove to the address given to him by Ding Yi, the house of Yang Dong's mother. "Chaotic era, chaotic era, chaotic era." The thought turned and turned in Wong's head.
Why would the path of the sun through the world of Three-Body be devoid of regularity and pattern? Whether a planet's orbit is more circular or more elliptical, its motion around its sun must be periodic. Total irregularity in planetary motion is impossible.
Wong grew angry with himself. He shook his head, trying to chase away these thoughts.
It's only a game. But I lost.
Chaotic era, chaotic era, chaotic era.
Damn it, stop! Why am I thinking about this? Why?
Soon, Wong found the answer. He had not played any computer games for years, and the hardware for gaming had clearly advanced greatly in the interim. The virtual reality and multisensory feedback were all effects he had not experienced as a young student. But Wong also knew that the sense of realism in Three-Body wasn't due to the interface technology. He remembered taking a class in information theory as a third-year student in college. The professor had put up two pictures. One was the famous Song Dynasty painting along the river during the Qingming Festival, full of fine, rich details. The other was a photograph of the sky on a sunny day, the deep blue expanse broken only by a wisp of cloud that one couldn't even be sure was there. The professor asked the class which picture contained more information. The answer was that the photograph's information content, its entropy, exceeded the painting's by one or two orders of magnitude. Three-Body was the same. Its enormous information content was hidden deep. Wong could feel it, but he could not articulate it. He suddenly understood that the makers of Three-Body took the exact opposite of the approach taken by designers of other games. Normally, game designers tried to display as much information as possible to increase the sense of realism. But Three-Body's designers worked to compress the information content to disguise a more complex reality, just like that seemingly empty photograph of the sky. Wong let his mind wander back to the world of Three-Body.
Flying stars? The key must be in the flying stars. One flying star, two flying stars, three flying stars. What did they mean?
As he had that thought, he found himself at his destination. At the foot of the apartment building, Wong saw a graying, thin woman, about 60 years old. She wore glasses and was struggling to go up the stairs with a basket of groceries. He guessed that this was the woman he had come to see. A quick greeting confirmed his guess. She was Yang Dong's mother, Ye Wenxia. After hearing the purpose of Wong Miao's visit, she was grateful and appreciative. Wong was familiar with old intellectuals like her. The long years had ground away all the hardness and fierceness in their personalities, until all that was left was a gentleness like that of water. Wong carried the grocery basket up the stairs for her. When they got to her apartment, it turned out to be not as quiet as he had expected. Three children were playing, the oldest about 5, and the youngest barely walking. Ye told Wong that they were all the neighbor's kids.
They like to play at my place. Today is Sunday, and their parents need to work overtime, so they left them to me. Oh, Nan Nan, have you finished your picture? Oh, it looks great. Shall we give it a title? Ducklings in the Sun? Sounds good. Let Granny write it for you. Then I'll put down the date. June 9th. By Nan Nan. And what do you want to eat for lunch? Yang Yang, you want fried eggplant? Sure. Nan Nan, you want the snow peas like you had yesterday? No problem. How about you, Mimi? You want some meat? Oh, no, your mom told me that you shouldn't eat so much meat. Not easy to digest. How about some fishy instead? Look at this big fishy Granny bought.
Wong observed Ye and the children, absorbed in their conversation.
She must want grandkids. But even if Yang Dong were alive, would she have had children?
Ye took the groceries into the kitchen. When she reemerged, she said,
Xiao Wong, I'm going to soak the vegetables for a while.
She had slipped effortlessly into addressing him by an affectionate diminutive.
These days they use so much pesticide that when I feed the children I have to soak the vegetables for at least 2 hours. Why don't you take a look in Dong Dong's room first?
Her suggestion, tagged on at the end as though it was the most natural thing in the world, made Wong anxious. Clearly she had figured out the real purpose of his visit. She turned around and went back into the kitchen without giving Wong another glance, and so avoided seeing his embarrassment. Wong was grateful that she was so considerate of his feelings. Wong walked past the three happily playing children and entered the room that Ye had indicated. He paused in front of the door, seized by a strange feeling. It was as if he had returned to his dream-filled youth. From the depths of his memory arose a tingling sadness, fragile and pure like morning dew, tinged with a rosy hue. Gently, he pushed the door open. The faint fragrance that filled the room was unexpected, the smell of the forest. He seemed to have entered the hut of a ranger. The walls were covered by strips of bark. The three stools were unadorned tree stumps. The desk was made from three bigger tree stumps pushed together. And then there was the bed, apparently lined with Ura sedge from northeast China, which the locals stuffed into their shoes to stay warm in the cold climate. Everything was rough-hewn and seemingly careless, without signs of aesthetic design. Yang Don's job had earned her a high income, and she could have bought a home in some luxury development, but she chose to live here with her mother instead. Wong walked up to the tree stump desk. It was plainly furnished, and nothing on it betrayed a hint of femininity or scholarly interest. Maybe all such objects had been taken away, or maybe they had never been there. He noticed a black-and-white photograph in a wooden frame, a portrait of mother and daughter. In the picture, Yang Dong was just a little girl, and Ye Wenxia was crouching down so that they were the same height. A strong wind tangled the pair's long hair together. The background of the photograph was unusual. The sky seemed to be seen through a large net held up by thick steel supporting structures. Wong deduced that it was some kind of parabolic antenna, so large that its edges were beyond the frame of the photograph. In the picture, little Young Dong's eyes gave off a fright that made Wong's heart ache. She seemed terrified by the world outside the picture. Next, Wong noticed a thick notebook at the corner of the desk. He was baffled by the material the notebook was made of until he saw a line of childish writing scrawled across the cover. Young Dong's Birch Bark Notebook. Birch was written in pinyin letters instead of using the character for it. The years had turned the silvery bark into a dull yellow. He reached out to touch the notebook, hesitated, and retracted his hand.
"It's okay,"
Yeah said from the door.
"Those are pictures Dong Dong drew when she was little."
Wong picked up the birch bark notebook and gently flipped through it. Yeah had dated each picture for her daughter, just like she had been doing for Nan Nan in the living room. Wong saw that based on the dates on the pictures, Young Dong was 3 when she drew them. Normally, children of that age are able to draw humans and objects with clear shapes, but Young Dong's pictures remained only messes of random lines. They seemed to express a kind of passionate anger and desperation born out of a frustrated desire to express something, not the sort of feeling one would expect in a child that young. Yeah slowly sat down on the edge of the bed, her eyes staring at the notebook, lost in thought. Her daughter had died here, ended her life while she slept. Wong sat next to her. He had never felt such a strong desire to share the burden of another's pain. Yeah took the birch bark notebook from him and held it to her chest. In a low voice, she said,
"I wasn't good at teaching Dong Dong in an age-appropriate manner. I exposed her too early to some very abstract, very extreme topics. When she first expressed an interest in abstract theory, I told her that field wasn't easy for women. She said, 'What about Madame Curie?' I told her Madame Curie was never really accepted as part of that field. Her success was seen as a matter of persistence and hard work. But without her, someone else would have completed her work. As a matter of fact, Wu Qian Xiong went even further than Madame Curie, but it really isn't a woman's field.' Dong Dong didn't argue with me, but I later discovered that she really was different. For example, let's say I explained a formula to her. Other children might say, 'What a clever formula!' But she would say, 'This formula is so elegant, so beautiful.' The expression on her face was the same as when she saw a pretty wildflower. Her father left behind some records. She listened to all of them and finally picked something by Bach as her favorite, listening to it over and over. That was the kind of music that shouldn't have mesmerized a kid. At first I thought she picked it on a whim, but when I asked her how she felt about the music, she said that she could see in the music a giant building, a large, complex house. Bit by bit, the giant added to the structure, and when the music was over, the house was done."
"You were a great teacher for your daughter,"
Wong said.
"No, I failed. Her world was too simple, and all she had were ethereal theories. When they collapsed, she had nothing to lean on to keep on living."
"Professor, yeah, I can't say that I agree with you. Right now, events are happening that are beyond our imagination. It's an unprecedented challenge to our theories about the world, and she's not the only scientist to have stumbled down that path."
"But she was a woman. A woman should be like water, able to flow over and around anything."
As Wong was about to leave, he remembered the other purpose for his visit.
He mentioned to Ye his wish to observe the cosmic microwave background.
Oh, that. There are two places in China that work on it. One is an observatory in Urumqi. I think it's a project by the Chinese Academy of Sciences Space Environment Observation Center. The other is very close by, a radio astronomy observatory located in the suburbs of Beijing, which is run by the Chinese Academy of Sciences and Peking University's Joint Center for Astrophysics. The one in Urumqi does ground observation, and the one here just receives data from satellites, though the satellite data is more accurate and complete. I have a former student working there, and I can make a call for you.
Yeah, found the phone number and dialed it. The ensuing conversation seemed to go smoothly.
You're all set?
Yeah, said as she hung up.
Let me give you the address. You can go over any time.
My student's name is Sha Rui Shan.
But he's going to be working the night shift tomorrow. I don't think this is your field of research, right? I work in nanotech. This is for something else.
Wang was afraid that Ye was going to ask more questions about why he sought this information, but she did not.
Xiao Wang, you look a bit pale. How's your health?
She asked, her face full of concern.
It's nothing. Please don't worry. Wait a moment.
Ye took a small wooden box out of a cabinet. Wang saw from the label that it was ginseng.
An old friend from the base, a soldier, came to visit me a few days ago and brought this. Take it, take it. It's cultivated, not very precious. I have high blood pressure and can't use it anyway. You can slice it thinly and make it into a tea. You look so pale that I'm sure you can use the enrichment. You're still young, but you have to watch your health.
Wang accepted the box, warmth filling his chest. His eyes moistened. It was as though his heart, stressed almost beyond the breaking point by the last few days, had been placed onto a pile of soft down feathers.
Professor Ye, I will come visit you often.
9. The Universe Flickers. Wang Miao drove along Jingmi Road until he was in Miyun County. From there, he headed to Heilongtan, climbed up the mountain along a winding road, and arrived at the Radio Astronomy Observatory of the Chinese Academy of Sciences National Astronomical Center. He saw a line of 28 parabolic antenna dishes, each with a diameter of 9 meters, like a row of spectacular steel plants. At the end were two tall radio telescopes with dishes 50 meters in diameter, built in 2006. As he drove closer, Wang could not help but think of the background in the picture of Ye and her daughter. But the work of Sha Rui Shan, Ye's student, had nothing to do with these radio telescopes. Dr. Sha's lab was mainly responsible for receiving the data transmitted from 3 satellites, the Cosmic Background Explorer, COBE, launched in November of 1989 and about to be retired, the Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy Probe, WMAP, launched in 2003, and Planck, the space observatory launched by the European Space Agency in 2009. Cosmic microwave background radiation very precisely matched the thermal black body spectrum at a temperature of 2.7255 K and was highly isotropic, meaning nearly uniform in every direction, with only tiny temperature fluctuations at the parts per million range. Sha Rui Shan's job was to create a more detailed map of the cosmic microwave background using observational data. The lab wasn't very big. Equipment for receiving satellite data was squeezed into the main computer room, and 3 terminals displayed the information sent by the 3 satellites. Sha was excited to see Wang. Clearly bored with his long isolation and happy to have a visitor, he asked Wang what kind of data he wanted to see.
I want to see the overall fluctuation in the cosmic microwave background.
Can you be more specific?
What I mean is, I want to see the isotropic fluctuation in the overall cosmic microwave background between 1 and 5%,
he said, quoting from Shen's email. Shaw grinned. Starting at the turn of the century, the Miyun Radio Astronomy Observatory had opened